Slice Your Age, episode 39.
Welcome to Slice Your Age, the show where we help you live stronger, thinner, healthier, and happier. Now, here's your host and personal coach, Dr. David Matto.
Hey everybody, this is Dr. Dave, and welcome back to the show. I welcome each and every one of you. As you know, I've said before, I really am so thankful for every single one of my listeners. And yes, I'm talking to you. Thanks so much for being a part of this. Short time ago, I opened up the 7190 hotline, the Slays Your Age hotline. The number is 410-429-7190. And we're going to start off the show right away by taking a question from a great listener named Jamie.
Hi, Dave. This is Jamie Presta calling in. I really enjoy your podcast. I've been listening to it nonstop every day to go to work. It's just wonderful what you have been adding to my life. I do have one question. I've heard a lot about the 4 miles that you've been talking about on your shows. And I was just wondering, you never say how long it takes you to do the 4 miles of walking. And I was just really interested. And keep the good work. You guys are doing an amazing job. And thanks a lot. Bye.
Hey, Jamie. First of all, thanks so much for the call. Great question. I actually get a lot of questions on what we call the magic four. So I will just let my listeners know. The magic 4 miles is the distance that I recommend. It seems to me, over my many years of experimenting and research and just trying things out on my own, there's something really, really magical about covering for a 4 mile distance. And it does not have to be a run. A walk is perfect. Something happens to your body and your psyche when you cover the 4 mile distance. If you do it every day, that's fantastic. But even if you do it a few times a week, there's something great about that distance. But you're right, Jamie. I never really talked much about the speed you should go at. And as many of my listeners know, I am certainly not fast when it comes to running. I'm a fairly fast walker, but speed is not the most important thing. The most important thing is that you cover the distance. However, saying that, when you do the magic four miles, and for those of you, by the way, that are in a country other than the U.S., because most countries, except for the U.S., of course, are using metric system. We're a little bit backwards here. We're still using miles and feet and inches and pounds and stuff like that. But in case you're in the U.K. or somewhere and you're in Canada, we've got listeners from all over the world. 4 miles, just so you don't have to calculate, it's roughly 6.5 kilometers, about 6.4 kilometers, actually. So just, it doesn't have to be exact. So if you want to say you're going to walk 6.5 kilometers or 7 kilometers, would be great. So Jamie, the time that I usually walk 4 miles in is roughly 1 hour, about 15 minutes per mile. Now that's a pretty fast pace. It's not race walking by any stretch of the imagination, but it's absolutely much faster than walking around a mall or a museum or taking a walk with your honey or somewhere. You know, it's a fairly brisk pace, 4 miles per hour or 15 minutes per mile. Now, if you want to get even faster than that, that's fine. It's not going to be simple to do. If you want to do a 14-minute mile, that's getting to be pretty fast walk. I'm going to say that you should probably try to do it between a 15-minute mile and, let's say, an 18-minute mile. I think that would be a pretty good gauge. I think if you start getting over 18 minutes or over 19 minutes, you're starting to get a little bit on the slow side where it's not going to have as much benefit as it would as if you're doing about a 16-minute mile. Now, there are many of you out there that are just getting into it, and doing a 15-minute mile is not going to be simple. So what I will say is, at least at first, do it at your pace, do it at what's comfortable. Don't even have a watch on. Just know the distance of 4 miles and say, I'm going to go out and just cover the distance, or even I'm going to start by covering half the distance and I'm going to work up to 4 miles. And don't really worry about the pace yet. But since you did ask the question, and it is a great one, as I said, I would really stick to trying to do, when I said between 14 and 16, that's actually pretty fast. So let's say between 15 and 17, 15 and 18, something like that. Keep it in that range, and you'll be good. Thanks for the question, Jamie. Hope that helped you at least a little bit. And thanks for listening. Thanks for your really kind comments. By the way, if any of you want to ask a question and get it answered on the air, on the show, give us a call at the Slice Your Age hotline. It's brand new. And I will tell you, the callers that ask a question have priority and we'll get you on, get your voice on. That doesn't mean I'm not going to answer questions from Facebook or from email. I will, but I love having your voice on here. The Slice Your Age 7190 hotline. Don't ask me what that number means. It's only the last four numbers of the phone. So it's 410-429-7190. It's just an easy way to remember the 7190 hotline. 410-429-7190. And in case you're wondering how else to stay in touch with Dr. Dave at Slice Your Age, well, of course, SliceYourAge.com. It's our website, our main site, where you can actually listen to all the podcasts. If you're not using iTunes, go right to the website, facebook.com/sliceyourage. Twitter, I'm on there as David Matto. Of course, find the podcast on iTunes. And also our YouTube channel, we set it up. It's called Slice Your Age, about once a week or so. There's no definite time schedule on this one, but it's coming out to once a week, once every couple of weeks. I put a really cool video up of me driving in the car, maybe 2 or 3 minutes, giving you some tips, just having some fun with me in my car. So check that out at Slice Your Age. That's the name of the channel on YouTube. If you can't find it, it's there. I think it's actually, if you just go to youtube.com/user/SliceYourAge, it'll definitely show up that way. So thanks for that. Yoko is still in Japan. She's coming back in a couple days. So it's another Yoko-less show. My apologies. We can't wait to get her back at home and in the studio as well. But anyway, until then, I am bringing a really cool guest into the show today. His name is Dr. Michael Goldstein, and he's actually a longtime friend of mine. He's a little bit older than I am. Mike Goldstein is, how old is he? He's 63, I believe. If you look at the guy, just between us, if you look at the guy, he looks like he's in his 30s or maybe 40. I'm not exaggerating. I'm going to try to get a picture of him put up on the show notes. But he's living such a great life. He's doing so many things right and for so long. He's a great athlete. He eats pretty well. I say pretty well because he's still eating meat, but I'm trying to convince him one of these days we're going to get him to go vegan, but that's okay. Mike, he's got so much to offer because he lives a very, very well-rounded life. Dr. Mike travels a lot, and he's passing through the Maryland area. And yesterday, as a matter of fact, we were out on the road together, and we're doing this long run, and it's pretty hot and humid out. And I'm thinking, okay, I'm pretty used to this course, but Mike's gonna probably keel over and have a tough time. But so we're running this course, and we get to this hill. I call it the infamous Piney Grove Hill. And I'm thinking, okay, Mike's not gonna be able to really make it up this hill too well. And Mike is running up this hill. He's kicking my butt. I'm way behind him. I'm like breathing, and Mike is like doing it effortlessly. And the guy is in such good shape. He's always been an athlete, always been in great shape, but it seems like time is not taking any type of a toll on him, on his body, on his good looks. And so, Mike, first of all, welcome to the show. I'm glad I could snag you for a little bit while you're passing through the area. So thanks for being here in the studio with me.
Well, you're welcome, Dave. It's great to be here.
And today, what I want to do is I want to help my listeners. How can I say this? I want to help them develop a lifestyle. And I say lifestyle because it's, as we were speaking yesterday, we were talking about this yesterday, it's not the kind of thing where it's like not like going on a diet and you reach your goal and then you just stop. This is something that I've been doing for like at least 35 years. I'm not quite as old as you are. You've probably been doing it a lot longer than I have, but we kind of got into this groove of a very, very healthy lifestyle. And it shows because, okay, you're living proof. 63 years old, you're a grandfather. Sorry to give that away, but you're a grandfather, just like I am now. Yep. But you are running, you're working out, you're skiing black diamonds, you're backpacking. I saw you last year. We were in your hometown. We were climbing rocks. I mean, you're nonstop, and you're 63, and you don't show any signs of slowing down. So I want to help my listeners today develop this kind of lifestyle. if they haven't yet, but develop this kind of lifestyle. So they're, when they're getting older, as everybody's aging, let's face it, whether you're 18 right now or whether you're 60, everybody's aging a little bit now. I want them to get into this lifestyle where they can feel great and know that as they get older, they're going to be able to do some of the things that you do, some of the things that I do. So we're going to talk about some of our secrets today.
Well, you're very kind, Dave, but I do want to clarify one thing. I am slowing down. As we age, we all slow down. But I think the key is to develop a lifestyle where you slow down at a much slower rate than you would if you don't have a healthy lifestyle.
Yeah, and I don't want to make it sound like you are running 6-minute miles or anything like that. Not anymore. I don't think I ever ran 6-minute miles, but you did in the past. You're a pretty fast marathoner, and we were even talking about this yesterday during our run. How, yeah, you're slowing down, but the point, and I've always told my listeners, it's not about the time. I'm not out there to, when I run a race, run a marathon, I'm not out there to win the race. I'm not out there to even come in the middle of the pack. I'm really proud to be one of those back of the packers. But the good thing about it is I do it, I finish, and I feel great, and I stay in great shape doing it.
Right. And the other big factor is, besides just staying in great shape, I think the key is feeling good. You want to feel good. And as you get older, you want to stay healthy, and you want to continue to feel good when you wake up in the morning. And I think that's the key. And you don't have to measure how well you're doing against what you did when you were younger in order to have that, in order to feel good.
Well, so let's talk about how we can motivate my listeners to get them into this lifestyle where they're feeling great. Now, I'm looking across at you. You know, you're sitting, we're facing each other. We're both on microphones here. And, you know, yeah, you're 63 years old. You don't have an ounce of fat on you. I don't even know how to describe. I mean, you look great, and it's.
A tapeworm, Dave. Did I not tell you that?
Maybe that's what it is. I don't know, but I want to kind of get into your mind and get into your psyche and figure out how you've been and how long have you been living this lifestyle, Mike? Roughly.
I have been running regularly since I was probably about 28 years old. And I'll tell you how I got started. It took an event to motivate me. I was a competitive tennis player in high school and college. And when I moved to my town of Griffin, where I set up a dental practice there, I entered a tennis tournament. And it was in the middle of the summer, and I was playing a long set. It ended up being a 2 out of 3 set match. And I knew I could beat this guy. This was the semifinals of the tournament. And I ran out of gas. This is before I was doing anything on a regular basis athletically besides tennis. And I ran out of gas, and I let this guy who was older than me beat me. And I got so frustrated, I said, for the next 10 days in a row, I'm going to run. And at the time, you know, I had such a busy schedule, I had no idea how I was going to find the time to do that. But for the next 10 days in a row, I ran just to show myself that I could do it and that I could change my lifestyle in order to make it happen. And I found even running 10 days in a row wasn't as disruptive as I thought it would be, and it was possible. And I did have the discipline to do that. And then I don't run every day, and I don't run 10 days in a row anymore. I don't even run 2 days in a row anymore. But ever since then, I've always been running on a regular basis with a few exceptions. Of some minor injuries where I've had to be sidelined for a week or two, I've run on a continual basis for at least the last probably 35 years.
And what would you say running has actually done to your life?
Well, what it's done, again, the main thing is it's made me feel better. It's kept me physically fit. It's kept my weight down. Once I started running, I lost about 6 pounds when I started, which I've never gained back. I mean, it just went off. So I think it's improved the quality of my life because I feel better when I do things, and it's helped me in anything athletic that I want to do. And just over the course of the day, it's given me better stamina, and I believe even helps control stress. I think it helps me handle stress better as well by being physically fit.
So, and you do a lot because I would say it sounds like running is like the core of your. Working out, because I know you even at age 63 now, you even go to the gym and you've got a personal trainer that you pay. How many times a week do you do that?
Well, usually about I average about 1 day a week with my trainer, and he puts me through a really good workout and keeps me motivated. And I really like going to him. I get a very, very tough, thorough workout with him. And I really enjoy having that motivation. But everybody doesn't need to have a personal trainer. There are other ways to get motivated.
Yeah, I mean, I don't. I, I used to have a personal trainer many years ago, but I got to the point where I felt like just doing it myself.
Yeah.
But getting back to the running thing, running versus going to the gym and the personal training, I mean, I know you're into a multitude of things, but would you say like running is like the kind of a central focus? Like that's the kind of thing that keeps you going, and it kind of like the other things are kind of like adjuncts, but the running is like you're kind of the most important thing to you to keep you in shape. Is that, would you say that?
I would say that's very accurate. But and I'll tell you why I like running so much, because there are a lot of other activities that will work as well or almost as well as running it keeping you fit. But to me, running is one of the most efficient exercises you can do. What I found is that it was easy to get into the lifestyle of running because you can run anywhere you go. Even if you're on vacation, it's easy to find a nice place to run. And I got to the point where I eliminated excuses for me not running by carrying my running shoes with me wherever I went and running clothes with me wherever I went. And I found it was easy to work that into my lifestyle. I could get out on the road and within 10 minutes, I've got my heart rate up. I'm sweating a little bit. I've got my entire lower body working. And it's just extremely efficient. Depending how fast I go, I can get my heart rate up as high as I want within just a few short minutes. Or I could slow down and have a nice casual run. It was just a very efficient way to get exercise.
But how do you stay so disciplined? Because you know you're busy. I don't know if I even told everybody at the very beginning when I brought you in, but you're a coach. You got a business where you're helping others become more successful. You let's face it, you travel a lot. You're all over the place. You've got a very, very busy life. You got a grandson in New York now who you're going back and forth to see. So you are one of the busiest people I know. So having said that, how do you stay disciplined? Because one of the most common questions I hear from my listeners is, I don't have the time. I've got kids. I've got a job. I come home. I got to prepare dinner for my husband and my family. I just don't have time to work out. You, on the other hand, are super, super busy, but it seems like that doesn't stop you. So give us your secret of staying disciplined and staying focused.
That's a very good question. I think the first thing is to find an activity that will keep you physically fit that you enjoy. If you do something, if you go out there and you start running and you absolutely hate it, then you need to be looking for something else. It may be walking. It may be swimming. It may be riding a bike. It may be going to the gym and just getting on a treadmill. Everybody is different, but find something and you don't have to love it. Sometimes you hear about these runners that go out and say, "Oh, I'm like in another zone. I just love it so much. It's the highlight of my day." That doesn't describe how I feel when I run. I enjoy running, but I mostly enjoy the benefits I get from it. I feel great after a run. After we had that long, hard run yesterday morning, by the time we showered, I just felt great. I felt invigorated. I felt like I could take on the day. And it was a great feeling. So find something that you enjoy doing or at least won't dread doing it. That's the first key. And then the second key, make that a priority in your life. When I first started running, my wife wasn't into running, but I was. And we used to have arguments because sometimes if I'd come home from work late, she'd have dinner ready because we were used to eating at a certain time. But I had to go out for my run, and I had to make a choice. I said, "Well, do I eat dinner or go for a run?" And years earlier, the choice would have been easy. I wasn't disciplined enough. I would have eaten dinner and skipped my run. But at that point, I was a little more motivated, and we used to have these little arguments, not big arguments, but she didn't quite understand how I could just ignore dinner time and go out for a run. Shortly after, she started getting into walking and running herself. And then the two of us developed the habit of running, and we put running as a much higher priority in our life. And then it got to the point where our running time was much more important than our eating time. And the eating time would be flexible depending on when we get in our run. And so the other key is making this a family event, getting your spouse on board to support your whatever you choose for physical fitness, and doing it together. I think that's a key as well.
Now, I know, I assume the two of you, you and your wife, are not the same speed when you go out and run. You're pretty darn fast. I can't keep up with you. So I'm assuming that the two of you are not the same speed. So how do you work that out? Yeah. Okay. You're both on board. You both have this healthy lifestyle. You both like to get out and run together, but is it really together? How do you work that out? If there's a disparity between the two, spouse or the significant other or friend you're hanging with and trying to do this, how do you work that out?
That is an interesting question, because my wife and I really go at different speeds. If I try to walk with her, I can't keep up. She's one of the fastest walkers I've ever seen. And as fast as I am running sometimes, if we're walking, I'm uncomfortable trying to walk. I have to break into a slow trot if I'm trying to keep up with her when she's walking. She can't keep up with me when I'm running. I can't keep up with her when I'm walking, but we seem to get along fine. And very often, we may go out somewhere. If we're traveling, we'll go out at the same time, and we'll each go in the same direction, and maybe I'll hook up with her at the end. And we'll go out and I'll run and she'll walk at the same time I am. Sometimes we'll go out to a local half-mile track in Griffin. But even though we may not be doing the activity side by side, we're still doing it together, and it's still a family activity.
Now, something really interesting you told me recently is that, and you've been running for 35 years plus.
Right.
And I know your wife's been running and walking for quite a long time as well. You two just started taking some type of a running class, like to learn how to run better. Tell me a little bit about that.
Yeah, it is a class on running technique. We're going to a class at a local athletic shoe store, has this running expert that actually videotapes your form. It's a running form clinic, and they talk about the most efficient way for you to strike the ground and the length of the stride that works best, and the cadence, how many steps a minute you should take for the most efficient way to run. And the goal of this clinic is to run more comfortably and to run without injury, which is kind of what I'm looking to do, because I want to run as long as I can, hopefully my entire life. So it really is eye-opening. You think that just running is common sense, you just get out there and pound the pavement, but there's a little more to it. And little things that you can do in the way that you do your stride can make a big difference in your comfort level.
Now, you know, after our run yesterday morning, I remember you said something very specifically to me. You said, great run. It was a tough run. We're sweating. But I'm so glad we did this in the morning, because if we didn't do it in the morning, who knows if we really would have gotten to the run. And I agree with you so much on that. I think that was a really important point, because, you know, a lot of my listeners, a very common question is, well, when's the best time to exercise during the day? Is it morning? Is it midday? Is it in the evening after work? And, you know, I always say, anytime you're comfortable with, anytime you have the time, there's really no like true advantage physiologically, I believe, to like running in the morning or running in the evening. Or when I say running, you can, listeners, you can insert your, or substitute the word, you know, what you do, your activity. It could be bike riding, it could be walking, whatever it is. But it was an interesting point, because we both looked at each other and said, you made the point that I'm glad we did this in the morning. It's done. And I'm a big fan also of exercising in the morning. Not that I don't like to do it in the evening, because I do sometimes, but I just feel so much better. It's done. And let's face it, when you get into kind of a busy day, things happen, things start appearing on your schedule, phone conferences, things like that. And sometimes if you plan to do something in the evening or after work, it just doesn't get done. So I'm pretty much a proponent, and it sounds like you are too, of getting your exercise session, getting your workout session done in the morning, and then getting on with your day.
Me too. And like we mentioned earlier, that if you make running a priority in your life, then it makes all the sense in the world to do it early in the day to make sure that there's no chance that it gets forgotten. So like any other activity that's important, you want to be sure that you fit it in your schedule ahead of other things. Because the other advantage is that in the morning, especially during the summertime, it's much cooler and you're more likely to want to go out and run when it's a little bit cooler. And other things like telephone calls and things like that, you can put off. It doesn't matter what the temperature is outside or what time of day it is very often.
Tell me what else you do. And I mean, we just talked a little bit about your, you go to the gym and you got this trainer. And I know it's funny, you've taught me so many different, like, little kind of cool exercises. We were even talking yesterday, I think during the run, you brought up this really cool little thing that I tried it, by the way, and I was able to do this, but you said, okay, so here's one thing I learned. Sit in it. I'm not sure you learned this in your running class or not, but you said, like, sit down on the floor in a cross-legged position and without using your hands and arms to assist you from standing up. See if you can stand up on your own, like using your core,
right?
Stand up from that cross-legged position. I tried it yesterday. It was not easy, but I was able to do it. And that's kind of an example of like one of the little, you taught me like a lot of cool exercises over the years. So like, what else do you do? You go to the gym. What do you do to like supplement your running, which is kind of like your core exercise?
Well, what I do, as you mentioned earlier, I do work out with a trainer one day a week, but I make sure I do resistance training at two or at least two, probably more like 3 days a week. I do resistance training. Running is a great exercise, but it kind of ignores the upper body. So I'll go and do resistance training. I do belong to a gym, or you can do it at home. I have a little gym set up at home, and it could be as simple. I know that you do a lot of exercises with your body weight. You don't have to have fancy equipment. You don't even have to have a special room in your house, but just get into the habit of doing push-ups. In my house, I try to make it easy for me to do exercises. I have a pull-up bar. I have different equipment. I have balance balls and other things that I can work out with. And I'm just in the habit when I wake up in the morning, just part of my waking up process, I go and ride on my stationary bike and I do some pull-ups and some push-ups and do some stretching. It's just a matter of routine. And when I'm on the road, I'll just do it in the room every single morning. And then during the course of the day, if not every day, at least every other day, I'll do some sort of resistance training to get the muscles working.
You know, it's funny because I have told my listeners for probably ever since almost the first episode that I have nothing. First of all, I have nothing against gyms. I love gyms. Gyms have helped a lot of people. But, you know, let's face it, gyms can be expensive. And in order to get to the gym, you got to get in some kind of transportation, your car, a bus, or, you know, however you get to the gym. So a lot of times there's barriers to actually getting to the gym. So I've told my listeners for a long time that, you know, you can do a lot of these things at home. Like you just said, use your own way. I do. So let me tell you what I do a lot in my home. Maybe I'm missing something. So maybe you can even help me, Mike. But on a day that I'm not running, or even sometimes when I'm running or walking at home, I will do push-ups. I've got one of those. You probably saw it. I've got one of those pull-up bars that just, you know, goes in between. It goes in your doorway. I think I picked it up at the pharmacy, the local pharmacy, for like 10 or 15 bucks. It's one of the best investments I've ever made to stay in shape, because pull-ups are great exercise. So push-ups, pull-ups. I do planks for my core.
That's a good one.
I also do crunches. I do squats, just free squats.
Right.
I usually don't hold weight but I do squats. What else am I doing? So just those alone, I think those four or five things I just said, kind of rounds me out, I think, and it supplements the running and the walking quite a bit, I think. Is there anything I'm missing there?
No, the only other thing I would add to that, especially as we get older, balancing is really important, working on the core. Just, and this is so easy to do when you're brushing your teeth in the morning, because you should be brushing your teeth every morning, standing on one leg. Just get in the habit of standing on one leg and balancing. It sounds easy, but it's really not. If you've ever tried it, it can be a real challenge. See how long you can do it. Time yourself. See if you can try it for 10 seconds and then try it for 20 and 30. It's a very big challenge, but it's a very good exercise to do.
Interesting. I'm going to try that. Now, you know, Mike, I do yoga. I've been doing yoga for several years now. We got a class every Monday evening here. And one of course, some of the poses are poses like that, like balancing poses. Like I think tree pose is pretty much you're standing on one leg. And yet, you know something? It's not as easy as some people think. I've never really tried brushing my teeth on one leg, but I'm going to try that. I'm going to report back to you and let you know how I do.
Yeah.
You're right. Balancing is really important. And I'm going to give my listeners a little tip also. When you're doing some type of a balancing pose, even trying the thing that Dr. Mike just recommended, while you're brushing your teeth, lift up one leg and just see how long you can do it. I'm going to recommend don't do it with your eyes closed. Keep your eyes open in a fairly well-lit room and see if you can focus on a point in front of you somewhere, maybe like on a bookshelf, or just focus on a single point. It really does help your balance. And then, of course, try it on the reverse, try it on the other leg as well.
That's cool.
Good stuff. Mike, do you do yoga at all? Have you gotten into yoga?
You know, I've been to some yoga classes. I wasn't very good at it, but I learned to appreciate what a great benefit it is for those who do yoga on a regular basis. And it's just something I haven't worked into my routine on a regular basis. When I do stretch, I do some stretches that I think you probably call yoga poses, but as far as formally doing a yoga routines, I do not.
Well, let's talk about that for a second. First of all, let me back up because I heard you say something, you're not very good at yoga. Well, I'm going to have a little argument there with you because there's no such thing as not being really good at yoga because everybody is different. Everybody's not as flexible. Some people are really, really flexible. Some people are not. I'm not flexible at all.
Well, I'm as flexible as I like to say is a piece of uncooked spaghetti, put it in perspective.
But you know, Sandy. Sandy is my yoga instructor. Right. And she's been on the show quite a bit. And Sandy will say that it's not a competitive thing. Like, you know, the person next to you in the class might look like they've come right off of the cover of a yoga magazine, whereas you might feel like a piece of uncooked spaghetti. That's the way I feel. But there are always modifications. And yoga is not meant to be a competition. Like, you've got to do what the person next to you is doing. Yoga is meant to help your body. And so even if you're modifying the pose a little bit, as long as you're getting a good stretch or something out of it, that's the most important thing. So get that out of your thought process that you're
good
not
point.
Good at yoga. You're good at yoga. You just maybe can't
at whatever level I'm at.
Exactly. Right? Exactly. Right.
That makes sense.
So, and also another common question that I'm asked is, because a lot of people have pain and, lower back pain is kind of a real common thing. And I know yoga and stretching can really help to prevent and eliminate pain. So you just brought up a really good point about stretching, and you've been stretching on I think a regular basis for a long time.
Right.
So what are some of your favorite stretches that you do on a regular basis? And not only your favorite, but maybe if you had to say like one or two of the most important stretches that somebody could do every day to help their body, what would you recommend?
Well, you know, the first thing I have to say is if we're talking about preventing muscle injury, especially if you're running, something that I've started to do over the last 10 years is to start your run, maybe start by walking. Just get the blood flowing to your muscles, even before you do any formal stretches. I'll start out in a very, very slow jog for about 30 or 40 seconds, and then I'll walk for 30, and then I'll go in a very slow jog for a minute. And I'll do this for about a half a mile or more until the blood is flowing. And then as far as the stretches that I like, doing quad stretches, let me see how I can describe this, standing up straight and putting one leg behind me and just putting, kind of stretching the leg muscle while you're pulling on your leg, if that makes sense. Other things, just bending over to stretch the hamstrings with a slight bend in your knees and to work that. And also stretching around the ankle and the Achilles tendon and just leaning against the wall with your feet flat on the floor and leaning forward to put pressure on your calves to just gently stretch those.
How important would you say stretching is? Let's say somebody's listening and they say, you know, I just don't have the patience for it. I don't want to do it. I'd rather just get out there and do some running, walking, go to the gym, but I'm not really into stretching.
I would say if you're getting by without stretching, without a problem, you must be pretty young, because when you get older, stretching becomes much more important. Those muscles need to be warmed up. They need to be lengthened before you put them under stress in order to run without injury.
And what about post-running? Do you stretch after you run as well?
Usually after I run, I do some mild stretches. It's not, in the way I understand it, it's not as important to do it immediately when you stop. But I think stretching, maybe after you cool down a while, it is important. And I always do the same stretches I do when I start, when I'm done as well.
And, you know, I don't think stretching necessarily should be only in conjunction with running or walking. I mean, let's say you've got a day that you're not running or you're not walking, you're not going to the gym. Doing some routine stretches in the morning, I think, is a great way to start your day. And it really does help, especially some of those hamstring stretches, because again, some of those are just yoga poses as well. You know, yoga and stretching are kind of synonymous. Although yoga has it's a lot more than just stretching. Yoga is breathing, meditation, getting, you know, there's a lot more to yoga than stretching. But, you know, so many people these days have lower back problems, lower back pain. And I'm going to tell you that so many of these problems can be alleviated with simple stretching of the hamstrings. I'm convinced of that. Before you start going to the doctor and getting on pain meds, if you just simply stretch your hamstrings, you will see some of this pain. I hate to use the word like melt away, but you know it does go away. It really can.
And the other thing, because a number of years ago I was plagued with some lower back pain, and it got quite bad. I went to the doctor, ended up getting an MRI, and didn't see anything on the MRI that helped me. And I found stretching, as you said, but also massage therapy was a great help to me. And we were able to pinpoint trigger points where the pain was emanating from. And by strengthening the muscles around the area, it seemed to help a lot.
Yeah. And as you know, of course, Yoko is a massage therapist, and we both really believe in it very strongly. If you know, if you can get massage therapy into your routine, even if you get a massage once every few weeks or once a month, I really believe in that as well. It's great advice too. It really helps quite a bit.
It's helped me through the years. You know, anybody who's been running a long period of time ends up getting some injuries no matter what they do. And, I don't know if you've ever had plantar fasciitis.
Thank goodness I have not experienced
you have it.
I know it's quite painful.
But my massage therapist got me through that injury. That was the only thing that helped in it, and it really, really worked to help.
Let's talk a little bit about, because you know, it's like it's not all lifestyle and living the best life you possibly can and looking like you. It's not all about exercise. It's not, and we didn't even really touch on eating too much today. And I know we can talk about eating a little bit if we have to, but what I want to do really is get into something that I think is super, super crucial. And I know you are on the same page with me. You and I have talked about this quite a bit, because and what I'm referring to is happiness. Because if you're not happy in your life, you can go out and do all the exercise you want. You can eat really well. But if there's something gnawing away at you, and so you just know something's not right in your life, whether it's a job, a relationship, anything, it could be anything at all. But if that's not right, let's face it, something's going to be wrong. Something's going to be inside of you. Something's going to be just eating away at you. You're going to be stressed, and you're going to have things happen to you like disease and, you know, and things like that. So let's talk about happy. You're a pretty happy guy, it seems like. I mean, unless you've been faking it for all these years I've known, you're pretty darn happy.
No, I'm not really good at faking happiness, so.
Good.
I'm a pretty happy guy, I'd say.
And so what's your secret to happiness?
Wow. Happiness.
I want to know what Dr. Mike Goldstein's secret to happiness is, because like I've told my listeners, I'm really happy. I've made some changes in my life. I wake up every day and I love what I do. You can tell I'm really happy with my surroundings. My cats are here. Yoko's here. And I've got a great life. And I could just only imagine if I had like a ton of stress or unhappiness. I could go out and run. I could eat well, but still my life, something wouldn't be right. And I would probably show a lot more signs of aging, even though I was doing like the other things. Okay. So you got to be happy. You got to have like that foundation of happiness.
Right. You know, and I admire you, Dave. You are the picture of happiness. And if I had to sum up why you're happy, is because you have a balanced life. Because you work at the balanced life. I've never seen anyone work as hard when they work and play as hard when they play. You have a healthier diet than anybody I know. You keep physically fit. You have a wonderful business and a wonderful relationship with your wife and family. So in one sense, balance is the part of the key to happiness. If I had to summarize my definition of what I consider the most important thing for happiness, I would say, is developing a lifestyle where the relationships in your life are the most important thing, more important than the possessions that you have.
Hallelujah. That is just music to my ears. I love it. Give us an example or several examples of that. How do you make that happen?
Well, I would say having a I have, even though my kids live in New York City, we have a great relationship. They can get me on the phone anytime. We talk almost every day. I'm a part of their life, even though we don't geographically live in the same area. My parents are living in Atlanta, and I'm a part of their life on a regular basis. And I still have a very great relationship with my wife of 40 years. And I think those are the most important things. And not losing sight of that, once you already, if you feel fulfilled through those relationships, then you're already happy. And on the flip side of the financial side, living within your means can help give you a sense of happiness and fulfillment too. That's a very important factor.
I so agree with all of those points you just made. I mean, you're a family man. You've got, and as long as I've known you, which has been a long time, I've witnessed your relationship with your wife, your kids, your mom and dad, who, by the way, your mom and dad are, how old are they now?
Well, my dad is 95, and you know what he did last week?
What did he do?
He bought a brand new car.
Your dad just bought a new car. And what did he get, first of all? I want to know what kind of car he got.
Well, he looked around. He was driving a town car, which is about two city blocks long.
Right, exactly.
But he downsized to a Hyundai Sonata. Beautiful car, by the way. This is not a car commercial.
So your dad at age 95 just walks into a car dealership and just says, I'm going to buy this car. And did he get like a five year lease on it or something, or 5 year payment plan?
No, I don't think they give him the 5 year payment plan, but he negotiated a good deal. And when he signed the papers, everybody in the dealership applauded him, and it was great. So he's got a brand new car.
Good for him. So you've got not only great family, but it sounds like you got great genes, which is always a help.
Oh,
having good genes in your family. But you've been close with your parents, your kids, your wife. You've got a really great set of friends that you're very close with. So that and I like what you just said a little while ago. You said that kind of stuff is so much more important than material possessions.
Right, the relationships.
Yeah, and You just mentioned one other thing about is financial about, and we're going to end it with this because I so agree with this because it's the cause of stress in so many people's lives. Live below your means, and you don't have to impress anybody. You don't have to go out and get like your dad got a nice car, but it wasn't like $100,000 car or
right.
anything. But I'm talking about even younger people. You know, you don't have to be keeping up with your next door neighbors and getting that bigger house and making sure your cars are always the best and getting designer clothes and the jewelry. And, you know, it goes on and on, and it's never ending. And something I learned a long time ago, Mike, is that no matter what I do, there are always going to be people that have a lot more money than I have. And there are always going to be people that have a lot less, no matter what I do. And trying to compete and show off, it's not worth it.
It's not
worth it. Live below your means. Live like a minimalistic life. I'll tell you, that's one of the things that's, I think, probably I'd say one of the most important things in my life right now is not really caring much about like the material things. They're not that important. It's about your life, your relationships, your lifestyle, your health, with foods you put into your body. You know, you and I have differences in the way we eat. I recently became vegan and you're not, and I'm sorry about that, but you will be one day, I think.
Maybe.
No, I'm kidding, but you never know. We've spent the last couple of days together, and I haven't tried to force anything on you. I totally respect what other people eat. That's not a problem at all, but the point is we both feel that you're eating a really healthy diet. I've never seen you put junk into your body in the many years I've known you. So whether you're, except for the dead animals you're putting into your body, we won't hold that against you. But all kidding aside, I mean, you're eating healthy. You got great relationships. You're living below your means. You're exercising. You've got a routine. And then look at you, age 63. I mean, I'll tell you, when I'm 63, in about 40 years, when I'm 63, I hope I look that good. No, I'm not that far behind you, Mike.
I'm 59. You're catching up, I think.
I'm catching up. I'm 59. But I will say, I think you could probably say the same thing. I feel better at 59 from what I've learned over the years, from what I'm doing. I feel much better. I feel stronger. I think I even look better than I did when I was 30. When I was 30, I don't know.
You weren't that good looking at 30, if I remember.
Not. Yeah, I was not. I was a mess. I think I was a mess. But anyway, listen, any last minute parting thoughts at all to help the listeners?
Well, if I can give one bit of advice is that, and you said it when you said there's always going to be someone wealthier than you. There's going to be someone healthier than you. If you're a runner, there's going to be someone faster than you. Don't compete with other people. Compete with yourself. Just try to get yourself better and take baby steps. If you're not a runner, go out and walk a little bit. If you want to try running, go out for a walk and then run 100 yards. And then the next week, run 200 yards. The next week, run 300 yards. If you want to develop your muscles a little bit, do some push-ups. If you can only do 2 push-ups, do 2 push-ups. The next day, maybe next week, try 3 or 4. And you'll be surprised. You will celebrate the little victories that you have and then work up to whatever your own potential is and don't compete with other people.
Fantastic advice from Dr. Mike Goldstein. Mike, you got to promise me one thing. I know you're a busy guy these days, but next time you're passing through town, you're going to come over again. We're going to hang out a little bit. We're going to do another episode here because I think this information, I just feel it. I think it's going to help my listeners. Just listening to you, you've inspired me, but I know we're going to help my listeners. So promise me you'll be back. You won't be a stranger, right?
Absolutely. It's always a pleasure, Dave.
Mike, thanks again. Have a great time, whatever you're doing next. And thanks for being on the show.
You're very welcome. Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to Slice Your Age. You are no longer alone on this journey.